2. Prince at Large. 1. Red London. Kell knelt in the center of the basin. The large circular room was hollowed out of one of the bridge pillars that held up the palace. Set beneath the Isle's current, the faintest red glow from the river permeated the glassy stone walls with eerie light. A concentration circle had been etched into the stone floor, its pattern designed to channel power, and the whole space, wall and air alike, hummed with energy, a deep resonance sound like the inside of a bell. Kell felt the power welling in him, wanting out, felt all the energy and the tension and the anger and the fear clawing for escape. But he forced himself to focus on his breathing, to find his center, to make a conscious act of the process that had become so natural. He wound back the mental clock until he was 10 again, sitting on the floor of the monastic cell in the London sanctuary, Master Tyrion's steady voice in his head.
Magic is tangled, so you must be smooth. Magic is wild, so you must be tame. Magic is chaos, so you must be calm. Are you calm, Kell?
Kell rose slowly to his feet and raised his head. Beyond the concentration circle, the darkness twisted and the shadows loomed. In the flickering torchlight, sparring forms seemed to take the faces of enemies. Tyrion's soothing voice faded from his head, and Holland's cold tone took its place.
Do you know what makes you weak?
The Antari's voice echoed in his head. Kell stared into the shadows beyond the circle, imagining a flutter of cloak, a glint of steel.
You've never had to be strong.
The torchlight wavered, and Kell inhaled, exhaled, and struck. He slammed into the first form, toppling it. By the time the shadow fell, Kell was already turning on the second one at his back.
You've never had to try.
Kell threw out his hand. Water leaped to circle it and then, in one motion, sailed toward the figure, turning to ice the instant before it crashed into the form's head.
You've never had to fight.
Kell spun and found himself face to face with a shadow that took the shape of Holland.
And you've certainly never had to fight for your life.
Once he would have hesitated. Once he had hesitated. But not this time. With a flick of his hand, metal spikes slid from the sheath at his wrist and into his palm. They rose into the air and shot forward, burying themselves in the specter's throat, his heart, his head. But there were still more shadows. Always more. Kell pressed himself against the basin's curved wall and raised his hands. A small triangle of sharpened metal glinted on the back of his wrist. When he flexed his hand down, it became a point, and Kell sliced his palm across it, drawing blood. He pressed his hands together, then pulled them apart.
Asosoro,
he told the blood. Darken. The command rang out, echoing through the chamber, and between his palms the air began to thicken and swirl into shadows as thick as smoke. It billowed forth, and in moments the room was engulfed in darkness. Kell sagged back into the cold stone wall of the room, breathless and dizzy from the force of so much magic. Sweat trickled into his eyes, one blue, the other solid black, as he let the silence of the space settle over him.
Did you kill them all?
The voice came from somewhere behind him, not a phantom, but flesh and blood, and threaded with amusement.
I'm not sure, said Kell.
He collapsed the space between his palms, and the veil of darkness dissolved instantly, revealing the room for what it was. An empty stone cylinder, clearly designed for meditation, not combat. The sparring forms were scattered, one burning merrily, another shot full of metal lances. The others, bashed, battered, broken, could hardly be called training dummies anymore. He closed his hand into a fist, and the fire on the burning dummy went out.
Show off, muttered Rye.
The prince was leaning in the arched entryway, his amber eyes caught like a cat's by the torchlight. Kell ran a bloody hand through his copper hair as his brother stepped forward, his boots echoing on the stone floor of the basin. Rye and Kel were not actually brothers, not by blood. 1 year Rye's senior, Kel had been brought to the Arnesian royal family when he was 5, with no family and no memory. Indeed, with nothing but a dagger and an all-black eye, the mark of an Antari magician. But Rye was the closest thing to a brother Kel had ever known. He would give his life for the prince, and, very recently, he had. Rye raised a brow at the remains of Kel's training.
"I've always thought being an Antari meant you didn't need to practice, that it all came," he gestured absently, "naturally."
"The ability comes naturally," replied Kel. "The proficiency takes work, just as I explained during every one of your lessons." The prince shrugged.
"Who needs magic when you look this good?"
Kel rolled his eyes. A table stood at the mouth of the alcove, littered with containers. Some held earth, others sand and oil, and a large bowl of water. He plunged his hands into the latter and splashed his face before his blood could stain the water red. Rye passed him a cloth.
"Better?"
"Better." Neither was referring to the refreshing properties of the water. The truth was, Kel's blood pulsed with a restless beat, while the thing that coursed within it longed for activity. Something had been roused in him, and it didn't seem intent on going back to sleep. They both knew Kel's visits down to the basin were increasing, both in frequency and length. The practice soothed his nerves and calmed the energy in his blood, but only for a little while. It was like a fever that broke, only to build again. Rye was fidgeting now, shifting his weight from foot to foot, and when Kel gave him a once-over, he noticed that the prince had traded his usual red and gold for emerald and gray, fine silk for wool and worn cotton, his gold-buckled boots replaced by a pair of black leather.
"What are you supposed to be?" he asked.
There was a glint of mischief in Rye's eyes as he bowed with a flourish.
"A commoner, of course."
Kel shook his head. It was a superficial ruse. Despite the clothing, Rye's black hair was glossy and combed, his fingers dotted with rings, his emerald coat clasped with pearlescent buttons. Everything about him registered as royal.
"You still look like a prince."
"Well, obviously," replied Rye. "Just because I'm in disguise doesn't mean I don't want to be recognized."
Kel sighed.
"Actually," he said, "that's exactly what it means. Or would mean to anyone but you."
Rye only smiled, as if it were a compliment.
"Do I want to know why you are dressed like that?"
"Ah," said the prince. "Because we're going out."
Kel shook his head.
"I'll pass."
All he wanted was a bath and a drink, both of which were available in the peace of his own chambers.
"Fine," said Rye. "I'm going out. And when I'm robbed and left in an alley, you can tell our parents what happened. Don't forget to include the part where you stayed home instead of ensuring my safety."
Kel groaned. "Rye, the last time..." But the prince waved off "the last time" as if it hadn't involved a broken nose, several bribes, and 1,000 lin in damages.
"This will be different," he insisted. "No mischief, no mayhem. Just a drink at a place befitting our station. Come on, Kel, for me. I can't spend another minute cooped up planning tournaments while Mother second-guesses my every choice and Father worries about Pharaoh and Vesk."
Kel didn't trust his brother to stay out of trouble, but he could see in the set of Rye's jaw and the glint in his eyes he was going out, which meant they were going out. Kel sighed and nodded at the stairs.
"Can I at least stop by my rooms and change?"
"No need," said Rye cheerfully. "I've brought you a fresh tunic."
He produced a soft shirt the color of wheat. Clearly he meant to usher Kel out of the palace before he could change his mind.
"How thoughtful," muttered Kel, shrugging out of his shirt.
He saw the prince's gaze settle on the scar scrawled across his chest, the mirror image of the one over Rye's own heart, a piece of forbidden, irreversible magic.
My life is his life. His life is mine. Bring him back.
Kell swallowed. He still wasn't used to the design, once black, now silver, that tethered them together. Their pain, their pleasure, their lives. He pulled on the fresh tunic, exhaling as the mark disappeared beneath the cotton. He slicked his hair back out of his face and turned to Rai.
Happy?
The prince started to nod, then stopped.
Almost forgot, he said, pulling something from his pocket. I brought hats.
He placed a pale gray cap gingerly on his black curls, taking care to set it at a slight angle so the scattering of green gems shone across the brim.
Wonderful, grumbled Kell as the prince reached out and deposited a charcoal-colored cap over Kell's reddish hair.
His coat hung from a hook in the alcove, and he fetched it down and shrugged it on. Rai tutted.
You'll never blend in looking like that, he said,
and Kell resisted the urge to point out that with his fair skin, red hair, and black eye, not to mention the word Antari following him wherever he went, half prayer and half curse, he would never blend in anywhere. Instead, he said,
Neither will you. I thought that was the point.
I mean the coat, pressed Rai. Black isn't the fashion this winter. Haven't you got something indigo or cerulean hidden away in there?
How many coats do you suppose there are inside that one?
The memory caught him like a blow. Lila.
I prefer this one, he said, pushing the memory of her away.
A pickpocket's hand swatted from the folds of a coat.
Fine, fine.
Rai shifted his weight again. The prince had never been skilled at standing still, but Kell thought he'd gotten worse. There was a new restlessness to his motions, a taut energy that mirrored Kell's. And yet Rai's was different, manic, dangerous. His moods were darker and their turn sharper, cutting the span of a second. It was all Kell could do to keep up.
Are we ready, then?
Kell glanced up the stairs.
What about the guards?
Yours or mine? Asked the prince. Yours are standing by the upper doors. Helps that they don't know there's another way out of this place. As for my own men, they're probably still outside my room. My stealth really is in fine form today, shall we?
The basin had its own route out of the palace, a narrow staircase that curled up one of the structure's supports and onto the bank. The two made their way up, lit only by the reddish dark and the pale lanterns that hung sparsely, burning with eternal flames.
This is a bad idea, said Kell, not because he expected to change Rai's mind, but simply because it was his job to say it,
so that later he could tell the king and queen he'd tried.
The best kind, said Rai, looping his arm around Kell's shoulders.
And with that, the two stepped out of the palace and into the night.